so we'd make him feel at home. So, again, let's make him feel at home. John H.
Your show, Bobby.
Hi, everybody. My name's Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad to be here tonight, and I'm glad to be sober. Just to be sober. And if you're new in Alcoholics Anonymous tonight, I hope that word doesn't offend you as bad as it offended me when I attended my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I sat in my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on the fourth day of November 1959, and you talked to me about being sober, I didn't think Alcoholics Anonymous had anything to offer me. And the reason I didn't think that is because I was as physically sober when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous as I am tonight. As physically sober. But that had always seemed to be my problem. If I could have stayed loaded forever, I'd never came to Alcoholics Anonymous. But I kept getting interrupted out there on my happy road of destiny by people in those little black and white cars with flashing red lights. You know, I get a kick out of things today. They have a whole bunch of new slogans and things that they're passing around, and one of the big deals in my part of the world is intervention. I want you people to know that the Los Angeles County Sheriffs knew about intervention in 1939. Ain't nothing new about that, but I'm glad. I have a whole new different idea because I've been sober from my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous without any type of mood-altering chemicals in my system from my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous to this one. And I think about being sober a lot. All the time I think about being sober. Sobriety is never very far from my consciousness. And when I think about it today, I never think about the idea that there's no chemicals in my system. When I think about being sober, I think about the way I live. See, I lived a certain way for a long period of time, and for a long period of time I couldn't stay sober. Just by the way I lived. Necessary for me to get loaded because of the way I've lived. I have been sober equally that much. Because I don't live that way anymore. Now, I'm really glad to be here. See, I think it's a privilege to be here to help those two monkeys celebrate their anniversary. I've been picking on them for 24 hours. But you see, I figured it's a privilege to be anywhere in an AA meeting. I've always figured it's some type of a privilege for me to be allowed to come in and sit down near you good people. I never have been able to get it through my head that I have a right to be here because I don't drink anymore. I just don't. I pray to God that I always remember that it's a privilege for me to come here and be allowed to sit in these rooms, let alone do anything. It's an extreme privilege when I'm asked to do anything, you know, to help share a couple of birthdays for a couple of guys that I love and have loved for a long time. I'm extremely pleased to be here fully clothed and in my right mind. And I only tell you that because a little over 32 years ago tonight, I crawled around on my knees in a cell in solitary confinement at a maximum security penitentiary barking at the moon. Because of a loving God, as he expressed himself through this program called Alcoholics Anonymous. It's no longer necessary for me to crawl around on my knees like an animal. You know, if I got nothing else out of this deal at all, I could live with that all the way home. It makes me feel good. I'd like to be able to stand here tonight and tell you, or anywhere else anybody would listen to me for 3 seconds and say to them, without any doubt in my mind, that's where alcohol and drugs took me to. Oh, I'd love to be able to tell you that. But you see, that's where I took me to. The only thing that alcohol and drugs did in my life, they kept me alive long enough to find Alcoholics Anonymous. That's all. I've always been an emotional misfit. Weird was just a nice term for me. I don't know where that came from. I was always a little bit off-centered. You know, I don't know whether I've always been restless and irritable and discontent. I've always been angry and hostile and bitter and hateful. I've always been like that. I don't know where it came from. It just seemed to come natural. I never liked drunks. Didn't like people who drank. Didn't like whiskey. I saw what whiskey did to people. I came from a long line of drunks. They did. Saturday night at my grandmother's house, they got drunk, beat each other up. That's what they did. They made whiskey, they sold whiskey, they got drunk and beat each other up and stole each other's women. They had a hell of a time. And I guess whoever survived was the king for the week. I don't know how they worked their deal out. I just sat around and watched all that. See, I understand that. I understand that very well. See, if you're angry and hostile and bitter, you understand violence. You understand what it's like to put your foot in somebody's belly. It's almost like a spiritual experience. You understand that? What I wasn't able to understand, and I have never been able to understand, how the same people could do that to one another on Saturday, would put their arms around one another on Wednesdays and say, we love one another because we're family. I guess I said to myself, I don't know whether it did or not. Could be true, not be true, I don't know. If that's what love is, you can keep it. Because I don't ever remember uttering the word to any other human being prior to coming into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. It wasn't in my vocabulary. And the reason was, you see, because I'm a taker. I'm a taker of things and I'm a user of people. I'm selfish, I'm self-centered, and I'm self-serving, and I got an ego bigger than all of Ontario. You don't need much more than that. If I ever told anybody that I loved them in my sickness, it means that I gave them an edge and they were going to be able to use me. And I don't do that. I don't give people edges. I keep the edge. Takers keep the edge. Because if you got the edge, I can't use you. That's the way I live. And that was natural. That was as natural for me as breathing in and out. Because I said I was never going to drink. Hell, I saw what whiskey did to people who drank. I watched my uncle drink whiskey and go to penitentiaries. I saw my aunt drink whiskey and work in those houses on the other side of the tracks. I saw my old man drink whiskey and beat up my mother. I watched my mother drink whiskey and beat up my old man. I watched them both drink whiskey and beat me up. I saw what whiskey did. I ain't going to drink, I said to myself. I'm not going to be like them bums. I'm going to be better than they are. I'm going to step out into that world, have something, do something, be something. One day I took a drink. I want you to know I couldn't be an alcoholic if I hadn't drank. Well, I figured that one out all by myself once upon a time. With all the great psychological evaluations going on, people forget that. Hell, they're trying to get us to sober up people who don't drink no more. They never have drank. Oh, you sober this one up. If you drink one, what's that? What happened to me in that psychological second of my life was that I sold myself into bondage for the next 20 years of my life. Not to alcohol, or later to the drugs that came into my life, but to the feeling I got when I drank alcohol. The feeling that took me from the black pit of nothingness, stood me into the gray fringes of the business of living, and installed in me this sense of arrogance that said, damn you, world, it's all right. I'm not good enough to be around the good people, but I'm too good to be around the bad people. It's okay right here. That's what alcohol did for me. If alcohol still did that, I'd still drink it. That's the same thing I know how to tell you. Alcohol don't do that no more. What happened to me when I drank alcohol happened to me every time I drank alcohol. I just don't know when to quit. I took a drink of alcohol, and 3 days later, they pulled me out from underneath the bridge and stood me in front of a judge and sent me to Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later, I took a drink of alcohol. They pulled me out of a car in Compton, stood me in front of a judge, and sent me to 20 years in the penitentiary. That's what happened to me when I drank. I got drunk and went places. I just traveled around. I went from reform school to reform school to junior penitentiaries to penitentiaries to nut houses. Nut houses. Now they call them treatment centers. Just dress them up, baby. Make them look good. They don't put them in there because they're mentally alert, I can tell you that. I'm sitting on a furlough from a reform school when I'm, 10 or 11 years old. I'm drinking a bottle of Marco Petri red wine, which was my drink. As you see, I started on wine and worked down. I bet most of you have never heard of Markopetra red wine. Very few people ever have. It was the experimental stages of Thunderbird. I remember I was telling a story at dinner tonight about I was in a restaurant in Palm Springs. Did the light go off? Did I touch something electric? Jesus. If you'd had as many shock treatments as I had, you wouldn't touch anything electric either, for Christ's sake. We were down at a restaurant in Palm Springs here a while back, and it's one of the fancy restaurants, you know, where they got these guys running around in their tuxedos, the wine stewards got them things hanging around their neck. And we're sitting in this restaurant, we're having dinner, and I looked over and saw this wine steward. I said, "Hey, come here." We're talking about Markopetra red wine. I said, "Come over." I said, "Hey, have you ever heard of Markopetra red wine?" And he said, "Sure." I smiled. He said, "But I never knew anybody who ever lived who ever drank it." And I looked at him and said, "I used to drink it by the gallons." He said, "Sure you did." And he turned and slowly walked away. And every once in a while, I'd look over my shoulder and see him standing over there watching me, and I'd do that real quick. Anyhow, I'm sitting on this street corner, and I'm drinking a bottle of Markopetra red wine, which is my drink, and it's not working. I drank the whole gallon. I'm sober as I am right now, scared to death, because the magic's not magic anymore. I don't know what to do about that. I'm scared to death. And a guy tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Why don't you try these?" And he gave me some pills. I don't remember saying to him, "What are those? Will they bother me if I take them?" Thank God they weren't X-Lax. That's all I could say. We could have a whole new 12-step program called Laxatives and Not if it's working around here. I could be standing here as an adult child of a laxative taker. Mother would have been functional, but she was on the toilet all the time and I was living. I hear stuff stupider than that after I hear so sad. I tell you, it works. That's all I can tell you. Thank God it works. Sitting on that same street corner a couple of years later on a furlough from another reform school, I'm eating pills and drinking wine, nothing's working, and the guy stuck a needle in my arm. And for the next 14 years of my life, I stuck needles in my arm and ran in and out of institutions. That's what I do. I live out in the streets, and I do what people like me who live in the streets. I rip, and I roar, and I run, and I tear up, and I destroy, and I use, and I abuse, and I take. Take and destroy. That's what I do. And then they capture me and I go off and rest for a little while. They're trying to hit me. Well, I want you to know that I was the star second baseman for the San Quentin Pirates for 2 years running. I played shortstop for the Folsom Outlaws. Try to stick that on your resume sometime when you're looking for a job. But see, I wandered through life. I wandered through life my entire life prior to coming into Alcoholics Anonymous without any conscious thought or conscious concern for any other human being who lived upon the face of this earth except for me. I never had any thoughts about anybody else. I never was concerned about how they felt. I was only concerned about how I felt. What was happening to me. Me. Except for one thing. I had a baby brother that I loved. And I guess that's why I loved Wayne and Bobby so much. I had a baby brother that I loved that was 3 years younger than I was. And I loved him. I guess if I was capable of loving anything, I loved him. Maybe I cared about him. Maybe it was a figment of my own sick ego. I don't know. But anyhow, there was some concern there. In 1951, on my way to the penitentiary, I stood in the old Los Angeles County Jail, and my mother screamed at me through the visiting screen that I was a murderer. It seemed that my 17-year-old brother had gotten into some of my poison and took an overdose of it and died. I don't know how to handle that very well. I got mad at it. I stood handcuffed between two detectives 3 days later out by a grave while they buried him. I got all the guilt and shame and humiliation and degradation of a lifetime hanging around my shoulders, and I want to cry, and I don't know how. Never will forget the look they had, though. They had that look. Look what you've done now, scum. You've killed our baby. I'm going to tell you, it went downhill from there. I spent the next 4.5 years of my life in a penitentiary. I came out of that penitentiary trying to prove what a psychiatrist in San Quentin told me wasn't true. He said, Johnny, people like you don't change. You're going to die down here. And he took me on and showed me a little green room. That's what people like. I said, not me. You don't understand, doctor. My case is different. I'm different. Theme song of the alcohol. I'm different. I want to tell you, it saved my life then. It'd kill me today. The sad part about that, the people in this room who are going to die drunk are going to die drunk with that idea in their head. I may be one of them. I don't know. The people in this room or in any room or any place in alcoholic, the alcoholic who dies today from this terrible disease dies with that thought in his head. My case is different. I don't have to do that nonsense. How come we're off now that institution bound determined I had that deal beat? And 6 months later, I'm laying in a nut house kicking and screaming. And that's when I made my round to some of the better laughing academies in the country, interviewing psychiatrists. I used to talk to them. Man, I sit there with my wraparound overcoat on top. We sit there, they talk to me about my mother, and I talk to them about their mother. That's when they introduced me to a thing called better living through electricity. And what I, have a slight glow about you, honey, I'll tell you that. And what I hope and pray to God is my last interview with one of them head jockeys was in a federal government hospital in Fort Worth, Texas, a little over 33 years ago. I remember being shuffled in and sit down at this man's desk. I remember sitting across from his desk. I remember looking up against his wall and looking at his degrees and his plaques and his diplomas. And I was under the impression he knew something because he'd been somewhere. Nobody had ever had the answer for me. And he looked at me that day and he said, Johnny, if you didn't drink these things and swallow these things and smoke these things and shoot these things, you wouldn't have any problems. When I was a kid in Hutchinson State Reform School, my counselor told me if I didn't drink, I wouldn't have any problems. When I was in juvenile hall in Los Angeles, my counselor told me if I didn't drink, I wouldn't have any problems. When I was in Whittier State Reform School in Los Angeles, my counselor told me if I didn't drink these things and swallow these things and smoke these things and shoot these things, I wouldn't have any problems. When I was in a Preston school for boys, my counselor told me that. When I was in San Quentin State Prison, they told me that. When I was in the Folsom State Prison, they told me that. And at long last, I'm making these nut houses, and every time I sit down across the desk from one of these well-learned, well-meaning people, they said to me, Johnny, if you didn't drink these things and swallow these things and smoke these things and shoot these things, you wouldn't have any problems. And what none of them ever took into consideration. And they still don't take it into consideration. Every time they told me that, I was as physically sober as I am right now. As physically sober. And I looked at him and said, you just don't understand. You just don't understand. Good God, you just don't understand. Make it 1950 again and I won't do this anymore. Bring my baby brother back and put me down there. It's okay. They didn't say that. They just said, don't do it. So a little over 32 years ago, they tied me down in the bed in the Los Angeles County jail, more dead than alive. I was 128 pounds, and I was yellow. And it was the doctor standing at the foot of my bed telling me I was going to die. His words to me were, son, you're going to die, and there's nothing we can do for you. I said, okay. All day passed, and all night passed. He come dancing back out of my room the next morning. He looked at me, and he said, son, you're going to die, and there's nothing we can do for you. And I said, okay. All day passed, and all night passed. He come dancing back into my room the next morning, and I had a terror grip me that I've never known before or since. The idea came to me I was going to live and not die. I was going to get up out of that bed, go to the penitentiary, and come back out and start that rat race all over again. I didn't want to do that. I'm tired. So I laid in that bed for 18 days and 18 nights. I didn't eat, sleep, drink, or do anything. I just laid there. And one night, because I knew nothing better to do, I screamed out the only prayer I'd ever said in my life. I said, oh, God, help me. I thought for a long, long time nothing had happened. There was no blinding flashes of light. Nobody come running down the hall with a dozen donuts saying, we got an A meeting down there. I didn't get up and wander off into the tulip somewhere. I just went to sleep for a little while. I don't know how many have ever kicked a two-year hair on habit, but that's what I was doing. That's the first time I'd been asleep in a long time. Tell you how sick I was. 2 short weeks later, I'm up running around the jail looking for some more of the poison to put me back on the bed I just gotten off of. You know why? In the back of my mind, where my problem seems to be centered, was the knowledge. The knowledge, not the supposition or the opinion, but the knowledge that once upon a time when I could not stand it any longer, I could ingest something into my system and I'm okay right now. Right now. That's all I ever wanted. Get it off of me right now. And even though it wasn't working anymore, and I knew it wasn't working anymore, I knew it would if I could just find the right combination of things. So I got loaded again. Stood in front of a Superior Court judge and was called a blood-sucking parasite in society. I was told that I didn't have the right to be around decent people. He was told the woman who was sitting in the courtroom, who was the mother of my children, if you care anything at all about your child, you'll never let this bum lay eyes on it. And what he told me that day literally drove me insane. Because for the first time in my life, I heard myself described as I always knew I was. You see, I have always known what I was. I have never been allowed or able to hide me from me. I can hide me from every last man of you. I can dress up and dance around and kippy-doo and do a lot of things. But you know that little prayer that Jack said, the man in the glass, man, that's true. That's an alcoholic's deal. I can't hide me from you. I knew what kind of a scum I was. You see, in sober eyes, with sober eyes, I had a long, long trail of destruction behind me. I could see it sober. I could see the faces, the things, and the people that I had destroyed in my lifetime when I was sober. And I could not stand that. And I couldn't get loaded anymore, and I can't get sober, and I'm in a hell of a fix. I don't know what to do. But I know that it worked once, it has to work again. It's the only thing that had ever worked. And when that man told me that day, it literally drove me insane because I spent the next 9 months of my life drifting in and out of total insanity in a cell, crawling around barking at the moon. And that was the shape that I came to you in on the fourth day of November on a Sunday morning in 1959. That's what came to you, that thing. Not a human, not an animal, a thing. Without feeling, without caring, full of hate and bitterness, animosity. I think, really believe that I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous looking for another group of people to hate. I'd run out of things to hate. There was nobody coming to see me anymore. There was nobody sending me penny postcards. There was no mother sending nothing. They'd all come. I'd done used them all up. They were through. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous not to get sober. Because they let women come into that penitentiary. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous over 30 years ago to smell perfume. I've been honking and sniffing around her ever since. Be careful what gets us sickos in here, I'll tell you that. I moved in and sit down in the back row in what I lovingly like to call my throne of contempt. I had my coat collar up and my shades on because I was cool. If I'd have been any cooler when I got here, I'd have froze to death, for God's sake. Remember looking up on the backboard, I saw 2 big A's, and I thought to myself, my God, I wanted into an anti-aircraft brigade. I didn't know what Alcoholics Anonymous was. I said to this clown sitting next to me, what is this? He said, it's Alcoholics Anonymous. I sunk down in my seat. Gangsters weren't supposed to be hanging out with them winos. It had been Gangsters Anonymous, or Over Hip Anonymous, or Dope Fiends Anonymous. Oh, isn't that macho? Kind of makes addicts seem candy-ass, don't it? Dope fiend. Be bad, act bad, talk bad, smell bad, get it on back. Ah! I thought, well, I'll wait for these women to get up and tell their racy stories. Now, you got to remember that when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, there wasn't very many young, pretty girls in Alcoholics Anonymous. There just wasn't. These old gals got up to talk that day, and they said they drank for a long time. Hell, you could look at them and know they'd been somewhere for a long time. It's simple. They said, I used to drink. I said, I'll bet you did. Bad stuff. You can tell. I mean, you know.
I knew everything. I didn't know how to stay sober, but I knew everything. I didn't know how to live out there, but I knew everything. I knew what was right, what was wrong, who was bad, who was good. I knew everything. Didn't know nothing. I knew so damn much, I didn't know nothing. Had so much useless information run around my head, it almost destroyed me. These people talked about God in Alcoholics Anonymous that day. I left. God was the reason I was. It was not my fault. God's fault. I hear that in AA all the time. You know that? Really? I really do. People say things like, I guess if God wants me to have a job, he'll shoot it down here to the club. Deal. Next time you get hungry, lock yourself up in a closet and pray for a hot dog. If God squirts you one through the keyhole, you call me. Man, I'll ride a bicycle to where you're at, I'll tell you. I've been looking for a deal like that all my life. I'll tell you what I've learned about God since I've been here, not very much. I've learned a very simple thing. I've learned that God won't do anything for me that I can do for myself. Nothing. There's only been one single thing in my entire life I have never been able to do. Only one thing. I haven't been able to do it before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't been able to do it since I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. I won't be able to do it tomorrow. Of myself and by myself, I cannot keep from drinking. I can't keep from taking a drink of alcohol by myself. Now yet, for over 30 years of my life, I haven't taken a drink of alcohol, any mood-changing, mood-altering chemicals, haven't smoked any of that little non-habit-forming weed. Stuck any needle in my arm. I haven't done any of that thing. I've been sober since then. Physically sober. And if you're doing any of those stuff, you ain't physically sober. And I'll tell you what blows my mind even more than that. From the first time I saw you to this instant, I haven't had a conscious thought or a conscious desire to put any of that stuff in my system. Now, that doesn't make me wonderful. That makes me a very sick man. My God seems to understand that I cannot harbor a thought in my sick head for over 30 seconds without putting it into action. My God seemed to understand that. I came back to your meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous because I've seen the miracle. I've seen the people. The people are the miracle. There's something you got to realize. You got to realize that I am not a miracle, but there's something miraculously happening in this room tonight. There is a power here. I feel it in every meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I felt it in my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Didn't know what it was. That was the magnet that brought me back to my second meeting. It's a magnet that brought me back to my third meeting and my fourth meeting until that final that day I stood in that meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in the back row, no different, no attitude change, no nothing change. And a guy got up at a podium very much like this with 23 years under his belt and said, a guy that I knew did 23 years in the penitentiary, stood at a podium like this very simply and told me I didn't have to live that way anymore if I didn't want to. He said, you don't have to do it like this no more. This is the day you go. After the meeting, I went up to him and said, how did he learn how to live? He told me about that book called Alcoholics Anonymous, that book. He says, if you go get that book, I'll go home and pray that you find some part of you in it. I guess he's prayed real hard, that little fella. I've been a student of that book from that day to this day. And the only thing I've ever found in that book is me. I'm not looking for a way to sober up the world or cure all of society's ills. I'm looking for a way to live peacefully and comfortably and joyously with me and the loving God that made me. I'll tell you about the strange phenomena that takes place in my life. I don't know about anybody else's life. I don't live inside of anybody else's skin. I can only tell you that for me, it seems like the closer I adhere to the principles that are written in that book, and the more willing I become to share that knowledge in this fellowship, just for the sheer joy of doing it, the more peaceful and the more comfortable And the more joyous I lived with me and the loving God had made me. Now, I had a lot of trouble when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was an alcoholic. You will have a few problems if you come to Alcoholics Anonymous and you're not an alcoholic. I didn't know what an alcoholic was, but that's nothing new. Most of the people who come here don't know what an alcoholic is. They think an alcoholic is somebody who drinks. Not necessarily. Everybody who drinks is not an alcoholic. Everybody who drinks. My dad drank until he was 89. He was just probably a drunk. The difference between a drunk and an alcoholic. Drunks don't have to go to meetings. You people confused me when I came here. I sat back there in the back row, and people would get up at podiums like this and say things like, I used to drink. Now I don't drink anymore. And everything's wonderful. I say, I guess I'm not alcoholic then. I'm not drinking either, and I'm crazy. I'm as physically sober as you are, Buster, and I'm nuts. So I guess I'm logical, isn't it? I'm not alcoholic. Keen alcoholic mind. Keen. Do you ever stop to think that nobody ever tells you about the keen alcoholic mind but the alcoholic? The Al-Anons don't talk about the keen alcoholic mind. They say the keen alcoholic got up last night and peed in the linen closet. Takes a lot of brains to think that one out. How smart we are. And then we come in here and say, oh, we know what to do. I heard things from podiums like this, like you got to get active in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to run around like a chick with my head cut off. I picked up ashtrays, poured coffee, smiled at people. Hi there. How are you newcomers doing? It's just... You know, newcomers come walking through that door, and God will grab you by the hand and stretch you there. Put you in the rocking room. Oh, God, it's wonderful. Went back and set an inventory point and died, for Christ's sake. I'm doing everything they're doing, and I'm nuts. Nothing's happening to me. Every time I went up to one of them, I said, what's going on? I said, it's in the book. What's in the book? Oh, it's there. You go look for it. You'll find it. You want me to tell you what it is? So you won't have to go through that. What it is what I thought it was, but it really wasn't when I took my first drink. What it is, but what it really wasn't, but what I thought it was when I swallowed my first pill. What it is, but what it really wasn't is what I thought it was when I took my first shot of heroin. What it is that missing piece that I was seemingly born without. It's the end of the search. I'm not looking for anything anymore. I found everything I wanted. And I found it sitting in a room with a man in a penitentiary a long, long time ago. Doing what that book says is a fifth step in a program of recovery called Alcoholics Anonymous. The most singly important event in my entire lifetime happened to me in an instant in that man's room a long, long time ago. I heard myself say to this man, I'm an alcoholic. And from way down deep in the depths of my very being, there came a freedom out of me that I carry with me to this very instant. As I stand here before you tonight, I know exactly what's wrong with me. I suffer from a disease called alcoholism. I'm an alcoholic. I'm not an alcoholic and anything. When I was an alcoholic and something, I couldn't have your program. I separated me from you. I was different from you. I didn't have to do what you did. And so I was lost and lonely and apart from and different. When I became an alcoholic just like you, no better, no worse, then I had to do what you have to do. If you got to do these things, so do I. And I come to understand, then my entire lifetime and the centuries before that, the only answer to the alcoholic that the alcoholic has ever had
confined within the first 164 pages of this book called Alcoholics Anonymous. Do you know that that book had been in publication for a little over 50 years now? And that book is responsible for changing more lives than all the combined therapy in the history of the world. If you don't believe that, you think about that. And that you'll have people who think that it's outdated. Same answer in 1935, same answer in 1990. There's only one answer for the alcoholic. Surrender. That's the only, you gotta surrender to win. The only answer in the history of time for the alcoholic has been a complete spiritual experience or a spiritual awakening. And I think it's fascinating to understand that in the 12th step of our program of recovery, it says having had spiritual awakening as a result of these steps. And yet I've come to understand you can't have a spiritual awakening that results in steps you ain't taken. I know that's a little deep, but try to hang on to it. It's as heavy as I seem to get. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, my vocabulary consisted of about four-letter words, and after I was into a program of recovery, people tried to help me. My vocabulary consisted of four-letter words. Mother ran all around in there somewhere. It was a trigger that made it all go. Some people sent me down a room and told me things like cussing was a crutch for conversational cripples. They word by word, sentence by sentence, paragraph by paragraph, fed me the English language. They stood my wrath when they corrected me. They didn't put up with my nonsense. They didn't say, oh, no, he's sick. Don't injure him. He's sensitive. We seem to think they're more sensitive today. I was telling people, the other day I went to a meeting. I don't know where it was. I was going to this meeting. I walked into the meeting, and you know, you always got a couple of hot shots who know everything. Standing at the doorway. Oh, it's you. Yes, me. No, I looked around and see who they were talking about. Thought maybe it was somebody else. You going to talk about God tonight? And I said, sure I am. Probably what? Oh, you should do that, Johnny. Why not? Oh, he says, we have newcomers here tonight. If you talk about God, you may run them out of A. Let me tell you newcomers something. If God will run you out of AA, whiskey will run your rusty back in here. Isn't this a cute little picture? We're going to give it to Wayne for a present. You know, I came out of that penitentiary on June the 4th, 1961. I came out to a world I didn't know anything about. Didn't know anything about that world. I hadn't spent one day in that world outside that penitentiary since I was 7 or 8 years old without something in my system. I went home to see my mother. She fell off step blind drunk. I picked her up and put her on a couch. Said, Mom, I'm going to an AA meeting. She said, fine. I think you should. I'd like to report to you that my mother's sober, but my mother's not sober. My mother doesn't stay sober. My mother gets drunk with regularity, and she comes to meetings when she ain't drinking. She's like a lot of people I sponsor. Can't seem to get the hang of this thing. I tell them, you don't drink between meetings, it works better. Oh. I learned a great lesson from my mother. I learned I don't have the power to get anybody sober. I don't have the power to get them drunk. If I had the power to get anybody sober, I wouldn't be here tonight. I'd be over at my mother's house. My mother needs to get sober. She's 85. But she's not an alcoholic. She says so. She just drinks whiskey out of a pint bottle. Alcoholics drink it out of quart bottles. She's having a little trouble because her doctor's helping her now. With a little not habit forming valiums. Mom's really getting strange, I'll tell you that. God love her. You know, my mother's one of God's children, too. She'll either get sober, or she'll go nuts or die. I don't even know if my mother's an alcoholic or not. How the hell would I know if my mother's an alcoholic or not? My mother may not have an allergy to alcohol. You know why I'm an alcoholic? I have an allergy to alcohol. I have an abnormal reaction to alcohol.
I didn't understand that. When I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, my sponsor told me that. He said, we have an allergy of the body. I said, what do you mean, allergy of the body? What do you mean? Obsessions of the mind. What do you mean? I don't know. What do you mean by that? He said, you know what it's like if people have allergies, they eat strawberries, they break out in rashes? And I said, yeah. He said, you drink, you break out in penitentiaries. You see how they were to me? Cruel. They didn't know I was sensitive. Tried to run me out. I had a sponsor who went to school for hard-hearted sponsors. His name was Norm Alfie. Mean? Jeez. You know what he told me? My wife came back and got this little girl and got pregnant. You know what my sponsor told me? He told me to go to work. I said, what do you mean by that? He said, work. W-O-R-K. I wanted a position. I didn't know how to do anything, but I was good at that. I thought somebody ought to give me a position because I don't drink anymore. He took me down and got me a job in the oil fields. I showed up there to go to work one day, and the guy asked me a dumb question. He said, what's your Social Security card number? I said, what? He said, so, do you have a Social Security card, kid? And I said, no. He said, how old are you? I said, I'm 30. He said, you don't have a Social Security card? I said, no. He said, why? I said, never needed one. He said, where have you been all these years? I said, you wouldn't understand if I told you. You know what he did? He took me down, got me a Social Security card, put me to work. I couldn't go snivel to my sponsor. He said, they're not hiring ex-convicts. I'll go down to the club. I wanted to hang out at the club. Talk AA. I don't know how anybody who don't work can talk AA. Ain't got nothing to do with AA. AA is working. We got a tradition that says we're self-supporting through our own contribution. I mean, that's a little deep. I understand that. There's a lot of folks. I didn't know what to do when you get money. I used to stand off in a corner of supermarkets and see what people did when they got paid. I didn't know. I didn't know how to do anything. I watched them. You know what they do when they get paid? They go home and get their wives and their kids, and they bring them to these markets. They put these kids in these baskets backwards, and they push them down the aisle. And they throw things in that basket, and they get up to this cash register, and that guy stands there and looks, and his eyes get, Jesus, we don't need that, do we? I watched them, so I finally got a paycheck, my first paycheck. And I ran home, and I said, let's go to the market. He says, we don't need anything. I said, we're going to the market anyhow. She said, why? And I said, that's what they do when they get paid. She said, who? And I said, them. Have you ever tried to explain them to them? If somebody comes up to you tonight and wants to know who them they is I'm talking about are, you send them to Al-Anon. They are they. I guess I had one of them spiritual look in my eyes like most newcomers get, like, we're going to the market, you bitch, or I'm going to kill you. Yeah, you get looks, wonderful looks. Every wife has seen that look in the eyes of their loving husbands. We went to the market, went through that cultural shock, came back, went to get some money to get a haircut, and somebody stole her purse. You want to hear somebody scream? Listen to the thief when they get stolen from. Well, I ran it and raved. I'll tell you, if there'd be another, if I could have found that guy, you'd have another talker here tonight. I'd be up there in Folsom telling you AA don't work. I got all running around and wild and crazy, and she finally looked at me and she says, you all through? And I said, yes. She poured me a cup of coffee. She says, now you know how it feels. See how cruel they were to me? Just cruel. So I went to work, saved up some money, and I have to ride my little girl's bicycle right through my old neighborhood by my old partners to go to an AA meeting. Now, you got to understand, my little girl's bicycle had a big wheel in the back, a little wheel in the front, and a little basket with flowers on the front of it. And I ride right by there on my way to an AA meeting, and all my partners are standing on the corner watching me. They'd say things like, boy, That AA really does work. That's a shock. Finally saved up enough money to buy me a car. I called my sponsor up and said, Norm, yes, I got enough money to buy me a car. I'm going to go out and buy me a car. He said, do you have a driver's license? And I said, no, why? I've never had a driver's license. They took them away in 1940-something. I don't ever get them back. Suspended for life. So what? He said, you ain't going to drive a car there. I said, why? He says, there's citizens like me out there driving around who are law-abiding, respectable citizens who don't want jerks like you out there running into them. Oh. Showed him I didn't buy a car. Finally, they got around to getting me a driver's license. The state of California made some rules and regulations, put me on some tests, gave me a temporary driver's license. So I called him up again. Norm, I'm going to buy a car. I got it now. He said, you got a driver's license? I said, I sure do. He says, you got money for insurance? No, I haven't. So what? You can't get a car. Norm, citizens like me don't want jerks like you running into us and making us pay for you anymore. I finally got enough money for a car, had my driver's license, and an insurance policy, and I didn't even tell him I went out and bought me a car. And I drove up to his house and honked the horn. Honk, honk. Hey, Norm, look at my car. He came out and he put his arms around me and he hugged me. He said, I'm so proud of you. He says, you finally learned to live within the framework just like everybody else. God, I can't tell you how that made me feel. My sponsor was proud of me. And then I'd call him up from time to time when I was having problems and I'd say things to him like, Norm! He said, yes. I said, my program ain't working. He said, try ours. His favorite expression to me was jackass. Jackass, he'd say, your program never did work. I'd say, you don't understand. He said, yes, I do. Try ours. And then I'd call him up and I'd say to him, I got a problem. What am I supposed to do? He said, why you ask me? I said, you're my sponsor. He said, yeah, but why do you ask me? If I can't run my life, what makes you think I can run yours? I said, what am I supposed to do? He said, you do what I do. I said, just what is it you do? He says, if you do what I do, then you'll know what I do. See how they are? They don't tell you nothing around here. Norm was my sponsor for 22 years before he died. And in those 22 years, I spent as much time with him as I could. I made time to be with my sponsor. I went with him to meetings. I went with him to lunch. I played golf with him. I went down where he worked. He came down where I worked. I went with him when he went with his family on vacations and stuff. I took my family and his family. We went on vacations. By the time he died, when I was 22, I had watched that man in every area of his life, except for one. I had never sat in a bedroom and watched him in bed with his wife. I would have if he had asked me. I really wanted to know. I really wanted to know. I didn't know. I just wanted to know. And when he died, it was a sad period in my life. For a year there, I wandered around and lost. A year and a half, I was lost. I didn't think I needed a sponsor because I've been sober for a little while now. I let some baby of mine sponsor me. You ever tried to ask a sick mind a sick question? You don't get well answers. I mean, really. What do you think about that? That's the type I get. They mumble. So one day I'm sitting down and I went down to see a guy in the Midnight Mission by the name of Clancy. And I made this statement. I said, I told him to his group not very long ago. I said, for years and years, I had a real tough, hard-hearted, demanding, driving sponsor. And I got tired of all that abuse. And so I thought I'd lighten up a little bit. And for the last 6 years, I've had Clancy be my sponsor. Give me one of them pussy cats to help me through life. But life has been pretty good for me. I stand here before you tonight and really tell you that I really don't know anybody I change places with. I haven't been wanting to be anybody else all day. You know what a fantastic statement that is for a guy like me? All my life, I always wanted to be somebody else, somewhere else, with somebody else, doing something else. I never wanted to be where I was. God, if I learned anything at all, I learned about right now. We live right now. You know, I don't get to stay sober tonight because I've been sober for 30 years. I get to stay sober tonight because I'm willing to come to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous tonight. This is the day I stay sober today. This is the day. This is the only day I got. This is the only time I got. I can't even guarantee I'm going to get back to my room tonight. But you see, I've been sober. And I put a little in today. I gave a little for the hell of giving it, my old sponsor used to say. My sponsor used to have a lot of fantastic sayings. He'd say things like, "What you are speaks so loud I can't hear a word you say." That's what I was thinking when I was watching Wayne and Bobby. "What you are speaks so loud, you don't have to say nothing around here." And that's good, and that's also bad. What you are, people can tell. You can see. I mean, you don't have to. Nobody has to run up and tell you, blah, 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 blah. Hell, you can watch him and see. Man is known by his actions. He's not known by his thought processes. A man is judged by his actions. When I'm checking out in this thing called life, and I'm checking in up there wherever you check in, I'll be judged on the actions that I took. That for 30 years of my life, I've been able to give a little for the hell of giving it. I discovered the magic in Alcoholics Anonymous. Be relieved from the bondage of self. When I'm concerned about you, more concerned about you than I am about myself, I don't have any problems. I can't tell you that every day I've lived out there, I've been walking on the sunny side of the street. I'm a human being, man. I can tell you that any problem that I've ever had in the 30 years that I've been sober has been my own selfishness and my own self-centeredness. God's not trying to test me for nothing. I get selfish and self-centered and self-serving. So I get out of sorts and I start dictating to self money, property, and prestige. I gotta have. I tell you a little story. It seemed like to me it's like we're all on a little pathway here. It says somewhere in our book in that meeting that I was at last night or today or something, it says, thoroughly followed our path. It seemed like I've been on a little pathway, walking down the pathway of life, and I come to a little fork in the road. And Norm's standing there, my sponsor's standing there. And I say to him, "Which way do we go, Norm?" And he said, "We go down here." "Why?" "Well, I've been down there." "What's down there?" 30,000-pound gorilla. Sounds like a Mercedes Benz to me, baby. "But you don't seem to understand, Norm. I'm different." "You see, I'm not really like you. My case is different. Why don't you go that way? I'll go down here and I'll pick you up over there where the road comes together in my new Mercedes." "Okay, John." Man, I go down there and that gorilla eats me up. Chews me up, spits me out, and throws me on the road. There he is, old skinny leg of Norm standing. I'm all battered and bruised. He don't say nothing. I say everything. "Norm. Oh, Norm. Man, I'm going to do everything you say for me. Now on, Norm. Man, I ain't going down there no more. That's right. I'm going this way, Norm. No more. You, Norm." We come to another fork in the road. "Which way do we go, Norm?" "Oh, go down here." "Oh, I'm different. I'm different." One day, I don't know where it was. God, I came out of one of them deals. Man, I think it was a big money deal. I just lost a lot of money or something. Just lost a business or something. And I said to him, "God, Norm, what's the matter with me? Why can't I just look at your scars and believe you and know that ain't right?" He said, "You really want to know the truth?" He said, "Yeah, why?" He said, "One of these days, you're going to be standing at the fork of the road. One of them dummies is going to come up to you and say, 'Which way do we go, John?' And you're going to have to tell him, 'We go down here.' And he's going to say, 'Why?' You're going to have to tell him, 'I've been down there.'"
But he's going to ask you what's down there. And you're going to have to tell him there's a 30,000-pound gorilla down there. Now, you better hadn't have read about that gorilla. You better hadn't listened to him on tape. You better hadn't have an opinion that there was a gorilla down there. You better been down there and fought that gorilla. Because if he goes down there and finds a 10-pound chimpanzee, he ain't going to ever believe anything you ever say again. I say, but why? He said, in Alcoholics Anonymous, Johnny, we share our experience, strength, and hope. Without experience, there is no strength. Without strength, there is no hope. Saw a man. He was sharp. He was clear-eyed. And he was sober. It's a miracle, Alcoholics Anonymous. By example, this man is. Norm taught me to buy the whole thing here. And the people who came to me, there was an old man by the name of Chuck that I loved like a father to me. 25 years, he was the only father I've ever known. And you know how you are when you're new, you're always trying to impress the people that you love so much. You know, I don't know where you were, but I used to ride around with this old man, this big Lincoln. He was a charismatic man. He walked in a room, they all went, everybody, there he is. And I danced right behind him, you know. But I was frightened to death of him. Really was. I was frightened to death of him. I didn't. I'd sit over in a car. One night we were coming back from a meeting one day, and we stopped to get something to eat, and he came out resting. He reached in the glove compartment, took out some Rolaids. I thought to myself, thank God he's got gas. He's a human being. And one night I was trying to impress him, and I stole something off a literature table. Wonderful. Ego building. You know, alcoholics are. We like to have things make us look wonderful. Godly. So I'm starting to read. I said, can I read you this, Papa? He said, sure. What is it? Why we were chosen. He said, hold it. We ain't chosen. We ain't special. We ain't nothing. We're just God's kids. That's all. If I am, you are. And if you are, I am. He said, Johnny, he makes the rain to fall on the just as well as the unjust. Then I said to him in my smartness, how come I'm sober? How come? I know people who are far better people than I'll ever be who aren't sober tonight. I have a baby daughter that I love who's a far better person than I'll ever be. My mother's a far better person than I'll ever be, and she's not sober. Why is that? That's pretty simple. You've come to understand you're one of God's kids. And you act like it, so therefore he treats you like one of his kids. And he says that those people who don't know aren't told, and you don't go tell them, they'll never know. And so it's been my primary purpose from that instant to this instant to stay sober and to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. I don't have any other purpose. My answer on the telephone to you will always be the same. If the date's open, it belongs to you. Because I don't have any days. I don't have any Christmases, any Thanksgivings, any 4th of July, any children's birthdays, any birthdays. Every day is my birthday. Every day is Christmas. Every day is the 4th of July. Man, I ain't never had it too good. Do you know that a miracle of my life is that every once in a while, I'm able to take the way I feel in these meetings out there in them streets and live with it for a period of time. Sometimes weeks. I'm able to live with the way I feel sitting with you. That feeling of everything is fine and dandy and God's in his heaven and people are here and I'm surrounded by love. I'm able to take that feeling out there and apply it in my life. And Chuck told me something once very simple. He said to me very simply, Johnny, would it be any more spiritual to practice these principles in an AA meeting or at home? Would it be any more spiritual to practice these principles in an AA meeting or on your job? Is one place any more spiritual than another? Is one meeting any more spiritual than another? Is one group any more spiritual than another? Is one set of principles any more spiritual than another? And I had to answer, no, it isn't. And so therefore, when I get to feeling like I feel tonight, and caught up in this feeling, this great healing power of love that's in Alcoholics Anonymous,
I know that I'm going to be able to take this with me back home. And tomorrow night, I go into my home group. They won't care where I've been. They could care less. Been to Toronto, huh? Big deal. I played golf. What did you do? All they're going to be concerned with is I'm sitting in my chair tomorrow night when that meeting starts. All they're going to be concerned with is whether I get to put the chairs away tomorrow night. I'm the co-chairman of the group I founded. How's that for prestige? You know what the co-chairman does? He helps the chairman put the chairs away. His dad's the chairman. 15 years sober. I told his dad when he was 15 years sober, if he did what I did, I told him when he was 1 year sober, if he did what I did, someday he'd be 15 years sober. He told me that the other night in the meeting. He said, "Well, I've been doing what he does for the last 15 years. I've been 15 years sober, and I still haven't caught up with him." Thank God. If you're new here in Alcoholics Anonymous tonight, or you're sitting in this room, if I had one prayer and one wish of power, one moment of power to install in you, there would be only one thing that I would install in anybody in this room. I would remove from you the idea or the thought that you're different. I would install in you the magnificent idea that you're alcoholic and you suffer from a disease called alcoholism. In an Alcoholics Anonymous, we have the answer. That's my prayer for you. That's my thought for you. I would give anything in God's world if everybody in this room would feel that way and think that way. Because then I know they would be sober forever and ever. And I don't know any better way to tell you than the way Norm used to tell me, the way he told thousands and thousands of people. All you got to know is, it's a long, long walk. From a cell in solitary confinement, a maximum security penitentiary, to where I stand tonight. But except for the grace of God, AA, and friends like Wayne and Bobby, I could have missed it all. Thank you.